Today anyway.
17.
Good morning. It is February the 17th. And this is the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means. Senator Roblin.
Thank you. I just wanted to acknowledge that we have some special guests in the room today.
Okay.
The daughter of one of our esteemed House members, Representative Taylor's daughter, and a friend of hers, are sitting out here in the audience. And I just wanted to make sure that we all knew that we had such special people here today.
Representative Cohn?
Yes.
I just also wanted to comment, they're here from Dunaway Elementary, and I believe it was ranked number one elementary school within Portland Public Schools, or perhaps statewide. I'm not quite confident, certain what that is, but they're a product of a fabulous public school.
Mr. Co-Chair?
Madam Co-Chair.
And so can your daughter and her friend come tell us what's so special about that elementary school? I mean, seriously, come on, come tell us.
Or they could tell us what we should be doing differently.
No, I just want to.
Yeah, come on up, girls.
And now you will be part of Oregon State history forever.
No, sit down.
And you have to tell us your name. And then give us your testimony.
Yeah, tell us your name, and then if you'd tell us what grade you're in, and what's the best thing that's happened all year in your classroom.
My name's Emily Taylor, and I'm in fifth grade, and the best thing that's happened all year is our famous American speeches.
Oh, so did you give a speech?
Yes.
And who was your famous American?
Amelia Earhart.
Good.
Oh.
My name is Grace Chatterton. I'm a fifth grader, and I think my favorite was the American history speeches.
And who was your person that you spoke on?
Misty Copeland.
And I don't know Misty. Tell me who she is.
She was the very first African-American female principal dancer in, like, ABT.
Great.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, Mr. Co-Chair, that's all the questions I have.
Anybody else have questions for these delightful witnesses? Thanks, girls. Hope you enjoy your day at the Capitol. Okay, John, tell us what we're doing.
Chairman Monroe, members of the committee, the Oregon Board of Medical Imaging is here to request that the legislature ratify fees that they establish administratively during the interim. So these fees are related to House Bill 2880 that passed last session. That bill specified that a physician's assistant cannot practice fluoroscopy without a permit issued by the board. So the board administratively created some of these fees that were effective January 1 of this year, and the board is here to talk about those.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Introduce yourself for the record and go ahead.
My name is Ed Conlow. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Medical Imaging.
Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee, my name is Anthony Medina, and I'm with the CFO office.
Okay.
Co-Chair Monroe and members of the committee, I'm here to speak in favor of the fees that were established by rule by the Board of Medical Imaging following enactment of House Bill 2880 in 2015. Several years ago, the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants approached this board to provide a pathway for PAs to practice fluoroscopy, which is, it's sort of like X-ray movie. It's a continuous X-ray beam where they can look at things flowing in the body. It's a lot of radiation. The board cooperated with the PA Association to adopt a limited permit, very similar to what the board currently does for limited X-ray. And we tried to mirror that process as closely as possible. And the fees that were adopted by the board by rule following enactment of HB 2880, I tried to mirror the process that the limited X-ray permit already had in place. They come in, they have to take an exam. We collect from a PA applicant 175 for the exam, which goes straight to the National Association that, that administers the exam. We keep $20, so the total they pay is it for that exam is 195. We keep 20 of that. Then after they pass the exam, they come back and they apply for a permit, and that's $5 a month. And those are the same fees we charge currently for someone to have a radiography license or a limited permit. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Conlow. Questions for Mr. Conlow? Thank you very much. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So as I look at the bill from 2880, or House Bill 2880 from the 15th session, and then the fee, and based on what you just said, I just want to make sure that, that what I'm tracking here is correct. This is not necessarily a fee increase. This is an establishment of a new fee for fluoroscopy. Which was something correct. Which was an ability granted by House Bill 2880 in the 15th session.
Correct.
And it's consistent with your other fees.
Correct.
There were a couple follow-ups there.
Go ahead.
Apologize, Mr. Co-Chair. No, I did go ahead. So do I understand correctly where we're at?
Representative
on
Springer, members of the committee, that's correct. I should say the fee that the National Association charges for this fluoroscopy exam is higher than what they charge for their X-ray exam. The X-ray exam, they only charge $125. The fluoroscopy exam, they charge $175. We just charge whatever the National Association charges. So, but those fees are all new, created to allow them to do this fluoroscopy.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? John, what's your recommendation?
Legislative Fiscal Office.
Did the person want to say anything? Do we know? Did you have any testimony you wanted to give?
Co-Chair Monroe, Senator Roblin, I do not.
I'm okay. I just want to make sure. He was up there and he didn't say anything. We didn't let the kids off without saying something. So.
We'll hear from him in a second. See whether he agrees with Mr. Tarpling's number.
The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends that these fees be recommended for inclusion in the fee ratification bill, which is Senate Bill 5072.
Okay. Now,
that's
right.
Das.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair, comp members of the committee. My name is Anthony Medina, and I'm an analyst in the CFO office. It is our recommendation that you approve the request.
Okay. Madam Co-Chair?
Just a moment, Mr. Co-Chair. Anthony, where'd you grow up?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair, comp members of the committee. I grew up in Jervis, Oregon. I'm actually your constituent.
That's what I thought. Okay.
That's clarifying.
Well, with the last name Medina, I mean, it's pretty safe territory.
Makes him a constituent of yours?
Yes. And
okay, well, we'll try and treat him nice.
Well, and if he graduated from Jervis High School, it too is probably one of the best schools in the state.
You've got some pretty high scores. Graduation rates, all of it, yeah.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move that we accept the recommendation as presented.
Okay. The motion is to accept the recommendation, which makes these fees permanent, or anyway, ratifies the fees that have already been established by the Board of Medical Examiners. Any further questions on the motion?
And we need to get Representative Huffman out of the hallway, Doug.
Well, we have a quorum without him.
But yes, but he wanted to vote.
I'm sure he wants to vote on this.
Mr. Chair, while we're waiting, if I can make just a brief comment.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So,
Rep. Springer.
Oftentimes when we are ratifying fees in here, I give my little spiel about not liking the process that these small agencies or these agency budgets decide how much money they need, raise the fees commensurate with that, and then come back and ask us to ratify. And if we don't ratify, then there's this big hole.
Yep.
And I don't like that process. I don't like that process at all. This, however, is a fee established on a House bill that I myself voted yes on, not to mention everybody that was present that day. to establish this process. And so this is a fee that is clearly established based on national norms. And so therefore, I happily support this.
Thank you, Rep. Springer. Yeah, one of the problems is that, of course, we're not in session all the time, but they are. And so sometimes that creates a problem in terms of apparently being the cart before the horse. But
if I may follow up then,
yes.
Since we went there. Having history of running a small business myself, I always had to project out. So I expect agencies to be able to project out a few months, 6 months even, especially now that we meet annually. There's opportunity every few months for us to get together and have that.
And when we're not in session, there's the emergency board and yep. other opportunities. Okay, anything else? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none. And is this
so we don't need a carrier.
We don't need a carrier because this will be part of the end of session, which is coming up quickly.
Thanks,
okay.
John.
Thank you. We'll close the work session on Board of Medical Imaging. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And now we have Doug back. We're going to open an informational hearing. From the governor's office, the chief education office.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Members, if you remember, Governor Brown announced the plan to create an education innovation officer, I think, at the business council meeting late last year. Details trickled out after that effect on what that position would be. Mr. Capps is here today to discuss what the intent of that position is and what the major responsibilities. I've also asked him to talk about what the relationships with the other major actors, including his role as chief education officer, as well as governor's advisor for education, as well as a relationship with the deputy superintendent and the Department of Education, and for that matter, heck, sort of where this position fits in with all the other sort of roles that agencies and individuals have. I think the plan is that they're requesting the blessing of this, at least for this biennium. They are planning to reclass an existing position in the chief education office for this, as well as to internally finance that, and we need to verify that this next week, that they can do that, but use existing revenues or resources this biennium to fund this position, but then we would need to fund it in the future if it is a permanent position. So Mr. Capps is here to discuss this.
Come on up, Lindsay. Brought Bill along for some moral support, I see. That's good.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lindsay Capps, the Acting Chief Education Officer and the Governor's Education Policy Advisor. I want to just commend Emily and Grace for their testimony this morning because it set a high bar for the rest of us. and I appreciate always the opportunity for students to be involved in the process. So it was wonderful for the committee to have them come up this morning. As your staff has indicated, my purpose here today is to talk with you a little bit about the Education Innovation Officer and our request to make this a permanent position within the Chief Education Office. And in doing so, I want to just give you a little bit of background, I think, to build on the introduction that Doug gave today. As the governor stated in December, in announcing this position and her intent to appoint someone to this position, she made it clear that she believes that we have more to do to make sure that our educational system is accountable. But accountability also requires making sure that we are empowering the best and most effective practices in our classrooms and schools that support student success. I think we all know, all of us in this room who are working on education, that we need to make sure that learning for our students is relevant, that it's engaging, that's inspiring, that we provide opportunities for students to see a real connection and a relevant connection between their education and their future. We know we need to do more to deepen relationships with individual students, broadening their learning, thinking about a well-rounded curriculum, and providing the supports they need to be successful as they navigate and transition across the learning continuum. And I'm personally, I think, very hopeful and optimistic, given even some of the conversations we're having during this short session about the types of ways in which we can support students, not only as we think about investments in the early years of education, how we provide supplemental supports around literacy and summer learning, and how we think about that critical transition from high school to post-secondary. So we've got a lot of good policy conversations coming together. One of the things that I think we need to do, and I think the governor believes we need to do, is better link practice and strategies along those lines across schools. And that's in part what the Education Innovation Officer is all about. This position will be charged with working directly with the Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction, with me as the Acting Chief Education Officer, and the governor, very specifically to design and direct the implementation of a comprehensive strategy focused on high school graduation. There is precedent in other states for a similar position of innovation officer and within large school districts and, frankly, within the public sector and private sector as a whole. Their objective, as these positions have been created, are to help systems work smarter, more effectively, and more connected to the communities that they serve, and in doing so, by empowering leadership at all levels of the system. As one chief innovation officer said in a medium-sized school district in Illinois, in a lot of cases, we've lost the perspective that inspiring our students, inspiring our staff, inspiring our communities and parents to get behind efforts to create more opportunities for our students is a critical piece of helping us all move the needle. So let me talk a little bit about the specific roles of the Education Innovation Officer as we've conceived of it. First, it's to continue the work that I think we've been doing through the Chief Education Office more broadly across the cradle to career system on gathering information about barriers to student success and specifically impeding high school graduation. The second is to convene school districts and communities to identify promising practices, strategies, and innovations that can support their work. This convening serves sort of two functions. The first and foremost is to listen. There's a lot of great work that's happening across school districts in little pockets. We want to sort of draw from what's working in high schools and throughout the K-12 system and share that out. We also want this position to work to promote open innovation, so the opportunity to generate ideas and strategies, working with school leaders and practitioners and community members, and to sort of help create processes to move creative thinking and problem solving forward across our state. A second piece of these convenings is really to help develop leadership. We know that school leadership is critically important in improving outcomes for our students and creating the cultures necessary for students to thrive and for teaching and learning to reach its full potential. And so we see this position working very closely with school district leaders and school building administrators in demonstrating for them and helping them support innovation and building collaborative partnerships both within their schools and across the communities in which those schools are serving. We think this is particularly important as districts individually, and we have 197 different school districts, set both short-term and long-term strategic goals and engage in their regular continuous improvement processes. We think that this position will help to build the capacity and thinking that goes into that work. This concept of convening isn't new. We had a long conversation in the last legislative session through the Senate Bill 215 work group with bipartisan members of this body led by Senator Roblin, and this was one of the key findings of that group is we need to do more to bring people together and importantly to engage communities in this conversation so that those who stand to participate in or to benefit from new innovative practices or strategies are directly involved in that decision making. That's important in making sure that these strategies and practices can be sustained and carried forward. The third piece that this innovation officer will be charged with doing is helping to evaluate and share promising practices that they're drawing from the field in consultation with experts, working with the research and policy team within the Chief Education Office, working with staff that are engaged in the Office of Learning at the Oregon Department of Education, and with a broader research network across the state that can contribute to that work. The fourth and final piece is, as they're out doing convenings, working with practitioners and communities across the state, coming back to us, and I say that collectively, both as the education agencies, as the governor, as the legislature, in providing some recommendations around policy priorities and resource allocation that can help move student outcomes forward, and certainly with a emphasis on carrying through the state's equity lens as that's been adopted. So as I mentioned before, the position will be located within the Chief Education Office. As the current agency director, I would have supervisory authority, but this position would work very closely with Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction, Salam Noor, and his team, as well as consulting and advising with other agency directors as necessary. We're obviously looking for somebody that would demonstrate strong leadership and vision, someone who has creativity and innovation in their prior work and can inspire that in others. We think experience as an education leader in the K-12 system is probably beneficial in helping to model for others what can be accomplished. This person will be able to needs to be able to facilitate decision making with an understanding of the complex issues and contexts in which they'll be working across the state. We're a very diverse state regionally and in terms of our cultural diversity. And they'll need some experience with large-scale and innovative organizational change efforts with strategic planning and problem solving, and certainly the ability to work effectively with all levels at all levels within the system. And lastly, I just reinforce the notion of listening. The opportunity to really gather from others the best expertise and put that together into a strategy that moves us forward together. With regard to the relationship to my position that I'm currently filling as Chief Education Officer, as you know, the position of Chief Education Officer was refined under Senate Bill 215, primarily to coordinate planning across education agencies from cradle to career, and to work across sectors to meet the statewide outcomes that we've identified from early learning through post-secondary and onto employment. So this position as the Chief Education Officer is really charged with continuing to implement the governor's vision of a seamless system of education. In my capacity, I'm currently serving as both in an administrative capacity leading the Chief Education Office as an agency and as the Education's Policy Advisor. And in that role, I play the role of convening agency directors on policy, budget, and strategic planning. The Innovation Officer, by contrast, will serve within our office with a very specific charge of working on high school graduation, which does have connections to the other sectors and agencies, but is itself a discrete task. And certainly we'll be working very closely with the Deputy Superintendent and the assets within the Oregon Department of Education to help move that work forward. This position, as was referenced at the outset, will be funded through a creation of a permanent position within the agency and at this point as a zero cost to the state. With that, I'll thank you for the opportunity to present today and happy to answer any questions you might have.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the timeline for hiring this new position and how you're going to – the process to get that person on board and how soon that's going to happen and so on.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, members of the committee, our intent is to have the governor directly appoint a position this spring.
Okay.
Mr. Co-Chair.
I'm Co-Chair.
I'm going to ask for a little bit clearer definition of the word spring. Can we have a month attached to it?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, I can only say as soon as possible. We know that this work is incredibly important, and so we're working with at all deliberate speed to make sure that this position is hired.
Yeah, go ahead.
So the position has been posted, and is there a closing date?
The position has not been currently posted. Our intent was to do this through direct appointment by the governor.
Got it. Thank you.
Rep. Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Monroe. Thank you for coming here today. And I, too, would have Mr. McGee with me at all times, since he has so much knowledge in that mind of his, so much history, that he knows so much about what's going on all the education fronts. So I'm just curious about, in the development of this position and this concept, what kind of conversations happened with local districts. And the reason I bring that up is in the last session, I happen to have had a bill that Senator Roblin's very familiar with that we tried to make it a requirement, and it ended up being voluntary for all the school districts to report back to the Department of Education what they were doing to increase graduation rates and address chronic absenteeism. That was a difficult bill to pass, I'll just put it simply. And with the support of Senator Roblin and others, we were and Representative Springer too, I believe, we were able to. It became voluntary, and we received that report back in January. I actually had a lot of information, and it showed some things in there, which it's just that whoever you end up hiring look at to shed some light about things that are very nebulous, very hard to overcome. And so I'm just wondering, you know, just a couple questions are in there. So what kind of conversations have happened with the local districts? And then it's one thing to identify, which is what I was trying to do, about what is actually happening around the state and that we could share best practices. And then, you know, what to do next once we find out. And you would see in this voluntary survey when there are about 90 schools or something like that, districts participated, and they said things like, you know, the kids weren't coming to school and they weren't graduating because they weren't engaged, you know. And so what to do with, like, that's a huge thing. And then there's other great things of which programs I thought were working. And Aspire, which I know Representative Springer is heavily involved in, that was one of the most successful programs in many of the districts. And I'm fine with districts doing different things, whatever works in their community. Obviously, that's something we should go with. But it's identifying is obviously one thing, and then what to do next and kind of what the plan is, or is the plan really just about identifying what's going on? And if that's the case, then that's the case. So I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about the conversations with local districts.
Absolutely. Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, Representative Taylor. This position has, as a top-line responsibility, the job of developing a strategy to address high school graduation.
Mm-hmm. And I hope chronic absenteeism, since they're so good.
There are a number of areas that I think we know already, either right, anecdotally or through data, that require our attention. Chronic absenteeism is one of those critical areas that we will need to focus on. The Chief Education Office, just on that particular point, has done some work through focus groups in the community or throughout communities in the state to sort of understand that issue better so that we can then translate that into strategies of action. I would see that chronic absenteeism would be something that this position would take that sort of data and then conversations out with school districts and communities, especially those that are doing a fairly exemplary job in addressing chronic absenteeism. And then helping to, amplify those strategies more broadly for districts to adopt or to look at. Context is important, and districts may take a different approach as to that. But to your, I think, bottom line question, what we're hoping this position can do is essentially ground truth. So in other words, create a connection between our policy and budget conversations that we have as education agencies, as legislators, as the governor sets her priorities, to say this is where we really need to put some effort into the work. And so I think this person would help us translate in many ways what's working to policy and budget action and resource allocation. So it's not just going out and having conversations and sort of sharing out effective practices. It's actually looking at those practices, evaluating them, seeing what works, and then seeing how we as a state can then put resource behind it and use all the levers of policy, legislation, and administrative action that we need to take to address it.
So that's because that was one of the...
It's to build a strategy. To build a strategy, but to do it in a way that's informed by communities across the state and by what's working.
Rep. Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So I was doing a little research on chief innovation officers, looking at the Harvard Business Review. I did a little research on what how they talk about the role and pros and cons and how it functions. And as I look at that review, a couple things come to mind, and maybe I'm simply hung up on one word, innovation, because what a lot of companies are finding, I realize we're not talking about companies, but I think that there's some very similar principles. One of the things that is talked about with chief innovation officers is really I don't know if they work with or in response to, but really when you're looking at this work, it seems like you're on a trajectory to do some new and different things. But while you're on that trajectory, you also have to have, and it's the CIO that is leading, supporting the ideas, while you have management continuing status quo moving forward. I know we like to use the word status quo as a negative, but just the status quo, just moving forward. And so you almost have them in competition of each other a little bit. And that's not what I'm hearing in your testimony. I'm hearing somebody that does a role similar to what we have at ODE in different in different roles there. So again, maybe I'm hung up on that one word because it just doesn't seem to translate to what you're talking about, and as I do a little research, how it's going to actually move forward. So that's not a question, but that solicits a statement from you, Lindsay.
Sure. Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp. So I think that the important distinction, I'm familiar with the article in which you're referencing, is that in some cases in the private sector where an innovation officer has been established, that position is sort of given a broad charge to kind of go out and figure out how to make business processes more efficient, more effective, better serve customers. One of the key distinctions I'd make in this case is this individual has a very discreet task, which is to help to identify innovative practices, to share those out across school districts, but then to bring that back into a statewide plan. And I think that's a critical distinction between how maybe those positions have operated in other places. The other thing I would say is, and I'll bring this back to where we are in the sort of trend line of education policy, and I'll look at the work that we will now have to undertake as a state under the new federal Every Student Succeeds Act. We have been given a lot more flexibility, both at the state and at the local level, to make sure that students, and most especially those who have been most persistently underserved and are not performing at levels that we would like to see, we have a responsibility to make sure that that we're doing all we can to support those students. And with that new flexibility, I think comes a responsibility to better link the work that's happening across school districts to ensure that those practices are effective. And that's what I was referencing when the governor talked about accountability. We've got to be accountable to really sound practice. And that's what this position, I think, is coming in to do, is to really help make that connection so that we, from a state level, have a sense of how this system is going to be working together and working effectively to improve student outcomes, and most especially on high school graduation.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. That helps. One of the struggles as I look at this and also hear your testimony, Lindsay, one position for 197 districts. That doesn't make sense. It simply doesn't. So I'm wondering if we're really talking about more of a position, whether it's we want to call it innovation or whatever, gleaning from best practices and bringing it back to a storehouse at the state level, at the governor's office, opposed to ODE, and saying, here's what we're seeing as working. And I don't see that as the innovation piece. So again, maybe I'm hung up on that word, but how can you be effective in 197 districts that are all extremely unique without just setting a statewide policy? And that's not innovation.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, Representative Springer. Again, I think it's bringing together across that landscape what we know is working. I don't think we're saying that this person is going to serve all 197 districts, but to sort of collect and pull the threads together of what's working across those districts, and then using the resources at the Department of Education to help advance some of those practices and strategies. And frankly, one of the great things that the Oregon Department of Education does is technical assistance. Mm-hmm. And they have education specialists. I think you have the opportunity to bring that expertise back to the department to then help support school leaders and practitioners across the state. We're creating a sort of a feedback loop, mm-hmm. to ensure that the state is both supporting and resourcing things that work, as well as making sure that we've got sustained technical assistance and professional development for leaders across the state that are really aligned to these effective practices, strategies, and interventions.
Let's follow up. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
How does this differ from a week ago in the Ed Policy Committee? We passed out. Or 2 weeks ago, I have no idea. We passed out a bill to learn information about what's working and what's not working and what's working in districts for absenteeism rates, and bringing it back and saying, and looking for best practices, and the conversation was the same, sharing those best practices, and having that storehouse. What's different? And we have lots of those bills. We have lots of those task forces and work groups to do that work.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, Representative Springer. I don't think in any of this work that it's a matter of just saying, here's the policy. It's really about educators, communities working together on an ongoing, sustained basis to develop and implement strategies. And there's a lot of work, as I think the school leaders that sit on this panel can tell you, in terms of both the cultural change that's necessary, in terms of the change in practice that can be necessary, and the involvement of those who are implementing those practices in making sure that they're effective and being implemented. This is going to be long-term work. There are things that we can do to move the needle in the short run, but this is long-term work across districts in the state. And so I think what we're saying is we can't just order from on high, here's what the policy is. We've got to also back that up with opportunities for those who are implementing the work and for communities that are impacted that to be engaged in making those solutions real. And that's in part what this position is intending to do, is to really help make that connection between the priorities that we've set here at the state and the work that's happening on the ground.
Let's go to Senator Roblin and then Rep. Taylor.
So I want to say thank you to Representative Springer for identifying, because this has helped me solidify why we need this position with every question you ask. Because what I see happening is we do a bill, we go and gather the information that sits someplace, and nobody takes charge of that and makes sure that it gets implemented. And so I am seeing innovation not as this person has a job to come up with new innovations, but rather to say, we have innovations happening all over the state, and we've all, and every committee I've been in, we've noticed that. Individuals have come in and said, here's what we're doing, and it's really working. But they don't have any time in their district to go help somebody else. That's not their job. Their job is to get their kids where they need them to get to. We have not had anybody whose sole purpose is looking at graduation and taking those innovations that are done. So they could go to Jervis and say, Jervis, you have an amazing graduation rate. So how did you do that? And then they gather that information and say to other people, here's five schools that are really doing totally different things. They're innovative and they work. And some of them are a lot like your school district. Mr. School District, look at these and say, which one would you like help with? Because we can get you information from here to there and help you start to implement. And hopefully find someone in your school who will come over to the other school, watch it for a while, and say, how can I translate to the needs that my community has? And I hadn't necessarily had that belief before this conversation about where it could be useful. Now, the question is, can they have the power and the ability to actually convince the school district that they need to make a change? Because I will tell you, that issue you said about the companies, status quo oftentimes wins out over innovation just because it's hard to change the ship. So you aren't going to get that. Even though they know they have a problem, it's hard to get them to move to find a solution. I believe that there's an opportunity for this to do that. I am happy we're just doing a one-year kind of thing to see if we're going to come back and do it in the future, because I think they need to show some success on the ground. But for me, this conversation has been really solidifying in the idea that there is a possibility that for the first time we'll have someone that takes all the reports we've done, figures out which ones have information that make work, and then get it someplace else and follow through to see that it does work. Because I have been exceedingly frustrated at times, passing report after report, and then getting information back, and we know it, but I go check with my school district, they didn't even know there was a report done. So thank you for helping clarify in my mind how it could work, and I hope that is in line with the kind of things you're thinking about.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Co-Chair Monroe. So I, too, am very interested in, I just wanted to today learn what the, you know, the education innovation officer is going to be doing, so I appreciate you sharing that. Is there going to be a formal, I assume it's going to be a formal job description, and when will we see that? Will it have tangibles in it, et cetera? Will there be...
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, Representative Taylor, yes. If it has not already been supplied to the subcommittee, I'll make sure.
Maybe it's not. I didn't see it, but not yet. Okay.
Yeah, if it didn't come with the formal request letter, we'll make sure that that's supplied to all of you.
Okay,
yeah.
And then follow up, please. Thank you. It is, so one of, again, regard referencing this, at least, and being a freshman and doing this bill last session, and to me it was so logical of, boy, we have this huge problem with graduation, absenteeism. You know, I think, well, we need to find out what everyone's doing and then share best practices and get people going. I mean, this seems so commonsensical, which is, you know, in many ways agreeing with what you're saying. But so many of the districts felt, if I may say, that they're like, boy, just another report, you know, just another thing, which is similar to what we're hearing today. So I'm wondering, is there, how will it work structure-wise and direction-wise? Are we going to require the districts somehow to participate and be partners in this? Is there something that, is there going to be somebody forcing something to happen? And how, so that's one question. And then how, when it, then we get down to the next levels of working with teachers who in many cases, their days are full, right? And so someone coming through and saying, do things differently. They're like, I'm just trying to get through the day here. And, you know, and so I'm just kind of curious about what discussions have happened and how we're going to, the districts, what requirements, will there be requirements, or would it just be voluntary to work with the innovation officer? And how is that going to work, please?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, Representative Taylor. I don't think we have any statutory authority to compel a school district to come to a convening. I do think, in my experience, there are a lot of conversations that are happening across the state around graduation in particular. And then certainly in some of the critical things that we have to do to support students. I had the opportunity to attend a convening of school administrators and teachers who came together to talk about student engagement. It was a really inspiring and hopeful conversation, because people are thinking about this this work. I think if you have the right person in this position who has vision, who's inspiring, I think they will have the ability to draw people into these conversations, because I think people are willing to dedicate time, most especially teachers in many cases, to thinking about how to best serve their students. So I don't think we have any intent of compelling people to do that, but I think we can work through existing organizations that are bringing together school superintendents and school administrators, as well as teachers in the variety of ways that they're brought together, as well as, you know, importantly, how we're reaching out to communities to engage folks around that, both rural communities and traditionally underserved communities. So I think it'll be I'll leave that question a little bit to whoever fills this position, but I'm going to take your point that, you know, we do have work to do to make sure that the system and all of its parts see the value of coming together and working to solve some of the issues that we're facing.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and I wish a couple of our members were still here, because I want to bring up a point that Senator Roblin and I, we drafted a bill that the governor thought was a good idea, and so she did an executive order for the bill, and it is about continuing to develop quality teaching and learning. And here's another tool that possibly this innovation officer will have, that will be working, it's a task force for a very short period of time to reach the goals that were in the bill. But I believe Senator Roblin and I are both committed to guiding and working with this process, and hopefully we might even be able to look at, you know, some of those schools that have done great innovation and bring those people on board and have a voice in some of this process. And the other comment that I would make, and it's a strange one, but there is leverage out there for schools to do as well, to do a report and maybe create a process where they can improve. I was blessed as a school administrator to Woodburn at one time. Well, we've always had a tremendous amount of ELL students, English language learners. And the federal government at one point thought that they would send a task force to Oregon to see what schools were doing. And so each of us, individual schools had to, well, I think we created two big fat binders, like LFO binders, full of reports and how we were meeting the needs of our special ed, ELL, and then our regular students. And our whole site council, the teachers, parents, everybody was involved in compiling this data. And purposely, the federal government said, we've been giving you a lot of money over the years. What have you been doing with it? And so the innovation officer, again, can use tools like our task force or communication with the different departments at ODE to say, well, has your school had, you know, it was a full, complete audit is what we had. And what do those records show? What did you learn from it? And Woodburn learned a lot. And particularly we as administrators, because we had to compile all that information and really see what our school looked like to outside eyes. And again, here, if you have an innovation officer, they are going to be looking with that different type of a clear lens. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all comes together. And yeah, it's just a comment or a statement, but I don't know if that, did I muddle it up, Lindsay, or did I add some clarity to it?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, no, I think you've added clarity. I think the executive order the governor issued to create an advisory group around how we provide an umbrella of supports and professional leadership development for educators is a parallel strategy in terms of making sure that all educators have access to the professional development that they need, and that we are putting a particular focus around cultural competency in the work as we think about the demographic shifts in the state and the students that we're increasingly serving in the state. So I think that's a parallel effort, I think, really focused on the how we elevate exemplary leadership among both teachers and school leaders. And that's a place where I think we can give a particular focus around leadership development, because I think there's leadership at both the school level and certainly as teachers engage with their colleagues within their schools. So I think that's very much, you've stated it correctly, it fits together.
Thank you.
Couple of things. First of all, I'd like to thank you and the governor for taking on high school graduation and this new innovation officer. First responsibility will be doing something about the fact that Oregon's high school graduation rate isn't very good. And it's embarrassing to me as a lifelong educator every time I read those numbers about Oregon being one of the worst in terms of graduation requirement. So thank you for taking that on. Secondly, there are a number of leaders in both the House and the Senate that have a lot of experience in education. And as you go through the process of filling this position, you and the governor should feel free to contact legislators if you have questions, or if you've winnowed it down a ways and you want to bounce ideas off of one of us that has some experience in education, you should feel free to do that. And then thirdly, when you get your new person in position, we would like to meet that person perhaps at legislative days in the fall, or at the very latest, at the beginning of the 17th session, and we would like to hear from that person as to what they're doing in their new position and what has happened and what they anticipate in terms of improvements in the graduation rate and so on. So, you know, we're agreeing with you, or I am anyway, that this position is critical. We want to help you find the key right person for this position if you need our help. And we want to hear from this person right away, soon, as to what they would consider success to be and what steps they've taken to achieve success.
Thank you, Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp. I think one of the most beneficial things that I've experienced, having been in the position of helping the governor with her choice for the Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction, were the conversations that I had with chairs and vice chairs of all the education committees, and I'm committed to having conversations again in naming this position, because I found that to be very informative, especially as you have relationships not only within education but with the local communities. The other piece I would just add into the questions that have been posed today, these are all very constructive questions that help us to think about how this position is further defined and how they engage in the work going forward. So I would just thank the subcommittee for the comments today, that will give us more to work on. So more than happy to obviously have this individual come to the subcommittee at the earliest date to talk further about how that individual sees the work unfolding and what the measures of success would look like.
Good. Thank Senator you. Thompson.
Yeah, just my advice to the governor would be probably don't put Rudy Crew on the list. can you relay that?
Wrote that down.
Yeah.
I saw him write it down. Anything else for Mr. Capps? Any other questions? Doug, anything?
There will be a meeting on Monday. There is a federal grant that you need to approve, so early learning division can apply for it, and there's also at least one bill presently, which I believe the number is 1537, but it is the fifth year bill that will be on the agenda, and there will be at least one more and maybe more. So,
and it has been assigned to this subcommittee, so
yes,
we will be working on it. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much.
You.
Appreciate your input. And
payback, can you tell Rep Huffman at 7 o'clock?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
I will.
Great.
I'll talk to him on the floor today.
Okay, super.
Okay, we are adjourned. And I would like to meet with. We are adjourned. And I would like to meet.